Welcome to this edition of When the Biomass Hits the Wind Turbine, a discussion of sustainable living and what that means to you and me. I'm Jay Warmke.
And I'm Annie Warmke.
You certainly are. Aww. And today we're going to talk about activism, or I'm mad as hell and I'm not going to take it anymore. Or as they say in Minnesota, right? I'm mad as, I'm mad as H-E double hockey sticks. So, all right, there you go. Now you got my Minnesota going. All right, so Annie, you talk a little bit here. I mean, you've always maintained you're an activist.
I was born an activist,
yeah.
Jay.
And we were talking about being accidental activists a while ago. So I think most activists would probably say, I didn't intend on doing this. I just got mad, and I did this.
Right? I remember the first time somebody said to me, oh, you're a community organizer, and I looked up. I was just out of college, and I was, 30 years old out of college. And they said, oh, you're community organizers. And I looked at them, and I thought, wow, that's a cute little name. But no, I'm not. I'm mad as hell, and I'm going to do something about this.
Well, I've never been in any organized community in my life. So I think we all need a little organization. So go ahead. Talk about
What's
activism.
What's that mean?
I have
no community
idea.
Organizing. Yeah. I'm just trying. I don't even know where you're going with that.
Organize my thoughts for me here, okay?
Okay, I'll try.
Come on, be an activist. Get proactive.
Well, I think in terms of activism, there are a number of things that go on in life that push us to really probably all be accidental in our activism. And I think we're at a time in our history as a nation and as a culture that lots of us are being activists without meaning to be. I hear this all the time. I hear people saying, it doesn't do any good to write letters anymore or go see my congressman or even to protest. And so people are feeling quite frustrated. And that's the really first thing that you hope for in terms of trying to cultivate in somebody their ability to create change. And that's what activism is. It's acting on something that you believe in, whether it's something you want to change or something you want to promote, and then actually having some kind of strategy of how to change that or alter it in some way. So I think the first thing, though, that has to happen is that we have to feel frustrated. We have to be pushed off of our comfortable little place that we sit, and we have to say, I don't know what else to do. And maybe you're even grieving. I know after the election in 2016, we saw this in many, many young people who come to us for a number of different reasons, either through our internship or tours or whatever. And they were truly grieving. And they were grieving for something that really didn't even ever exist, at least in their lifetime. And that was the ability to influence the government and to feel safe and that somebody's going to come and rescue you. And now that we're in a period of time where none of those things are possible, we've got to come up with some answers. We've got to organize ourselves. And
Let me back you up just a second, because first off, I'm going to ask the question for those people who are listening, saying, "What the heck does this have to do with sustainability?"
Everything. It's got everything.
Well, I figured it was because I agreed that we would do this as a show. So, so I'm assuming it has something to do with sustainability. So tie it all together and then go for it. Go tell us how to change the world.
How to change the world? Well, I don't really want to change the world. Mm-hmm. I think I want to just change the path I'm on. And I think that's where it all begins. But the reason it has everything to do with sustainability is that we're living in a day and age when basically the end of the world has been announced in 2030, which is 12 years from now. A government body says, we aren't going to be able to inhabit the earth. And so I think people are getting in a hurry.
Okay. Well, I'm not going to leave that one unchallenged because as far as my memory goes, the end of the world's been coming ever since
I
could remember.
I don't really care. So. That isn't the point. The point is that that some of us are a lot more motivated, and it's not me. I live my life every day motivated to live in a world that's different. But lots and lots of people who've never thought about this or had the luxury to think about that they have the ability to change something now feel incredibly motivated. They see flooding. They see horrible hurricanes. They also see people don't have enough. They see the government falling apart. There are all kinds of visible things that show us that we're not living in a sustainable way.
Right. So I would say, though, for those people paying attention, there's always been a motivation to want to change our society. I mean, if you're paying attention. But now it's really in your face. There are
it
so
is
many
absolutely
things
in our face
that are just shouting at you, saying, look, this is dysfunctional. This is broken. It should be different. Nobody who should be making these changes seems to be effectively making these changes. So each of us ends up with this thing of saying, if they're not going to fix it, I'm going to do my bit to try and
I don't think we're there yet. I think they're saying, so who is going to come? And we've talked about this in other episodes. But the reality is the frustration is growing because it's becoming more and more clear that there is nobody coming to help us. So as people who want to live more simply and want to try to stretch out the resources that are on the earth and in our neighborhoods and in our lives, we have to, as my grandma would say, we have to
I knew what your grandma was going to say. She was swore like a trucker. So anyway,
she did not. Oh my gosh!
All right. So basically, what you're saying?
She was a Baptist. She would never cuss.
Yeah. Right. Okay. So basically, what you're saying is, in order to sustain this world, you know, in some manner or form, which we would like to inhabit it, each of us will, or a significant portion of us, will need to become activists. We will have to change something about our own behavior.
Well, we have to first be activists with ourselves and change our own behavior and not feel like we're giving something up, but actually gaining something.
Right, the Gandhi thing of be the change you want to see in the world.
But the other challenge is we get this grandiose idea that we're going to go out and change some big thing. Well, maybe we might get lucky. And you could call it lucky or not, but the guy who set himself on fire and started the Arab Spring, he did create a lot of change. It doesn't seem like it's long lasting.
Well, he was the catalyst. He was the catalyst for something that was ready to blow.
That's right. So timing is everything. But the timing for right now is within each of us. It isn't about that we're going to change a lot of things around us because, frankly, the things that we need to decompose and decay and fall down have not quite fallen apart yet. But those of us who've been thinking about this for a long time and recognize that we have the skills to be activists and organize people, those people are coming forward. And then I think some of us need to be saying, how do we train other people to be able to channel that energy to change something within themselves so that then they can see what else they want to change, whether it's in their family or at their workplace or in their neighborhood or the universe.
Okay, so basically what you're saying is you first off need to be aware that there's a problem. It typically has to tick you off a bit.
People just feel it. They're not really sure what it means.
And then once you're motivated, usually through anger or depression or the 17 stages of grief or whatever that is, then you're saying, okay, now you got to take it upon yourself and say, you know what, I'm gonna be the one to take some action.
Yeah.
And then you've got to be at the right place at the right time, typically, because oftentimes people will say, hey, everybody, follow me and let's storm the castle. And you'll look behind and you're the only one there.
Most of the time. That you're going to be the only one in the beginning. And that's why it's important to, as one of the first steps, is really to link up with other people.
Mm-hmm.
Because there are an awful lot of people right now in this culture who are incredibly frustrated and they don't know what to do with it. I just came back from a consulting project I did in Florida, and I spent some time with people that I've known most of my adult life, and it was interesting to hear them talk about their relatives who are very upper middle class, they have everything they need, and how frustrated they are that it isn't doing any good to change things because they write letters or they go visit their legislators and that changes nothing. Everybody just smiles and goes about what they're going to do anyway. And so they're feeling frustrated. They're looking for some answers. And that's a unique group of people because they have the resources to live comfortably and maybe not quite notice what's happening around them. They can put themselves, you know, on the other side of the barrier. So there are some things that we have to think about. And I think the most important issue is to find a community, a tribe, even if it's three or four people. Maybe it's the local Unitarian Church or a committee that's meeting at, you know, the United Campus Ministry in Athens or something like that.
Well, with today's technology, I mean, social media is that way of gathering like-minded people together. But how is that then? How do you turn that slacktivism of, oh, I tweeted something and therefore the world changed, you know, or just grousing about things online or complaining into, I mean, how do you make that effective?
Well, I wasn't really referring to that because I think what we do.
So it's ineffective on the face of it.
Well,
right?
I think what we tend to do is be frustrated or sad or angry.
So Facebook is a way for us all to be frustrated and sad and angry together.
No. That's your thing.
Right?
No, what I was getting at is that what often happens when people are in crisis is they find somebody, and Facebook would be a good example, or Instagram, or send a tweet or whatever, and they say what is frustrating them, and then they temporarily feel better because they feel listened to, and then off they go and they stop trying to make some change within themselves. And so this is not what I'm talking about. What mm-hmm. I'm talking about is finding real live human beings. I know this is a unique concept that you could have a coffee with or tea with, and you could sit down and say, this is what I'm frustrated about. And then what you begin to do is to think about what could we do about it? And I can't say what that would be. That would have to come out of that group. But I think that this is what has to happen. We have to organize ourselves. And one of the things that we're doing at Blue Rock Station starting in January is we're having an accidental activist school that's part of our free school so that we can begin to help people identify their true skill sets. So that's one of the first steps is say, well, what are my real skills? It's not about where I graduated from university. It's whether I have the ability to move an agenda, identify something and move an agenda, and how that works and how it can work and how we can create networks and things like that. So it's really important to not let yourself just sit there and say, oh, I told somebody I'm upset and now it's all good, because it's not.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because that's basically Thanksgiving dinner in most households, you know. I'm upset and it's because of you. So, okay, so we're moving past there. You're saying one of the resources is other people. That's one of the resources that's going to become effective. And what I'm hearing you say is face-to-face, you know,
right.
Actually.
Well, there are a lot of roles that other people can play, because if you want to create activism, you have to be able to have a lot of different skill sets. And obviously, we don't all have those skill sets. So other people that know people, other people that maybe have the ability to give a little bit of money in case you need gas money or you need to pay a speaker to show up or whatever. So benefactors, we need benefactors. And we can talk more about that after you do the call letters.
After I do the call. Okay, so with that cue in mind, you are listening to When the Biomass Hits the Wind Turbine with Jay and Annie Warmke, reminding you once again that it is, in fact, the end of the world as we know it. And
Thank God.
And yeah. And let's go out and be active about this.
Yeah. So I just wanted to share a couple stories mm-hmm. that have to do with benefactors. So in my work over my adult life, I've started a number of projects and been a pioneer in the battered women's movement and started some women's funds and things like that. But it always started out that there were benefactors. And I can honestly say I wouldn't be sitting here today if it wasn't for some of those benefactors. And they did a lot of different things. But the one thing that I was good at, and I'm still good at, didn't change, is identifying people that have something in common with me, with what I believe, and then creating social situations. And this isn't manipulation or anything. It's saying, hey, you know, let's talk about what we have in common because I'm frustrated. And so when we started organizing battered women's projects in rural areas, it's because I had been a battered woman. So there's this in a rural area. So there's this self-absorption, this hedonism that comes into the activism.
Well, you have to bring your own unique experiences to the role. But when you're talking about bringing people together who have different resources, it just reminded me, because I know when you were dealing with battered women, you brought in the NRA, the National Rifle Association, saying, hey guys, you guys claim to be all about self-defense. This is about self-defense. Isn't this a common thing? Don't we each have the right to defend ourselves?
And that brought in a powerful ally. It did. However, we had to have an agreement that when we sat at the table, they didn't bring up anything except the right to self-defense. And they didn't do anything that I didn't ask them to do. So in those days, letters made a difference. Plus, they knew the governor. They knew the cabinet members. They could call them up and get them on the phone. I mean, I did the same thing with the Junior League and Baptist women's groups. And, you know, these are not groups that necessarily would have agreed with me about anything else. But they did agree that women had the right to live in a safe environment and they had the right to self-defense. So, again, but there were benefactors, there were powerful allies, and I had the ability to bring them to the table, and that was important. But I also had people in my life like you who said, when I was the most discouraged, you know why it's working? You know what's happening is when people push back, it's because you're winning. And that made it so I couldn't give up.
Well, that brings to the next question is how do you deal with that inevitable pushback? Because almost by definition, well, certainly by definition, if you're being an activist, you're trying to change the status quo. And Mr. Status and Mr. Quo typically don't want to be changed.
No,
I mean,
they
they're
don't.
Perfectly
no, no.
happy
and
being
And white
where
guys
they are.
Do not give up power without it being taken. I'm sorry to say this news.
All
but
right. Well.
Before we get to that, before we talk about pushback and mm-hmm. white guys and all that, just a little bit about timing. So timing can be everything. Right now, the timing is fantastic. If you want to be an activist, it may not feel like that because everybody's still trying to use the same old stuff with letters and just saying the right thing. And they think that these people are going to do the right thing, which they are not. And they're also thinking that people are going to come and help, and they are not. But the timing is fantastic for organizing folks because people are frustrated and they don't know what the answer is. And that is exciting because guess what? We're going to come up with some of the answers. And that part is going to knock everybody for a loop. So we have to also have people who can help us develop strategies of what's possible. And for example, one of the papers that I wrote, an op-ed piece that I just saw in the file recently, was where I wrote a whole thing about why aren't we setting a date to end whatever it is we're working towards. So why aren't we setting a date to end domestic violence? Or why aren't we setting a date for world peace? Because the reality is, if we can't visualize it, how are we ever going to get there?
Right. So strategy, the strategy is very important.
Strategy is vital.
Well, I remember when you were first getting involved with getting battered women released from prison down in Florida for defending themselves. And you had struggled over this for a long, long time and kept saying, I'm not a lawyer. I don't know the law. I don't know how I can help these women who are in prison. And then one day, you know, having that kind of eureka moment of going, this isn't about the law. This has nothing to do with the law. This is about public relations.
It's about the politics of life. That's right.
If I can make the powers that be look ridiculous, look embarrassed, then we're going to get movement on this. But the legal system so rarely has anything to do with the law.
Well, but the thing was, we also manipulated the legal system and we trained law students.
You manipulate a lot of people, the media, the prison system.
Well, we were doing our jobs, let's put it that way.
Well, manipulate has a bad connotation, but basically if you're in activism, you're wanting to manipulate the system. You want to change that system to do what it is you want them to do. That is manipulation.
Well, it's also having a strategy that says when things present themselves, let's go for it. So I do remember once getting, I had been hired to start a women's fund in Florida, and I got an invitation from the governor, and I had been organizing these women who'd been in prison who were battered women, and we were trying to write letters, and we had hundreds of letters had been generated saying, what are you going to do about women who are going to prison that don't belong there, that have acted in self-defense? And then I got this letter that invited me to the governor's mansion to talk about the role of women, at not women's funds, but private foundations and the government, because they had used that money to hire somebody to settle a lawsuit in the prison system. And I looked up at the woman who was helping me, and I said, we're going to go see the governor. I mean, how often do you get invited to his house to eat dinner with him?
So we Well, I don't want to brag, but...
you never did, you stinker.
We've gone through the drive-through window at McDonald's a couple of times.
Anyway, so what we ended up doing was we spent a lot of time creating a strategy that we would wear our really best hats, because I loved hats and I had some really great hats. And we would have one question we were going to ask, because I knew I was going to be nervous as I could be. And so we drove all the way to Tallahassee, 4.5 hours. We got out of the car, and there was the governor holding the door for us. It was like, whoa, it's an omen. And the whole evening was really crazy. But when I finally did get to ask the question, he screwed up the answer so badly that his public policy person, I don't remember, I think she worked for the environment as public policy, which meant she was an attorney. And she had spoken to me at the meeting right before everybody started having the conversation where I asked the question. She said to me, oh, I love what you're doing with the Women's Fund, and I would love to participate. Are you looking for board members? And I said, yes, I am. So when the governor was handling my question so poorly, I could see her shaking her head, and I thought, I'm going to get kicked out. She's going to kick me out. And when it was over, she came rushing up to me, and of course, I knew at that moment I'm toast. And she said, I'm so embarrassed. The governor handled that so badly. You call me on Monday, and I'm going to make this happen.
Okay, so a couple of things occurred to me as you're telling that story. One is focus. Right. I mean, you had one question, one issue.
Mm-hmm.
Went in there with your agenda and say, instead of being all over the place about everything, because when it comes to complaining, we can all scattershot pretty easily. So you're saying kind of be laser focused on your issue. And it occurred to me also when we talk about the pushback, I remember through that process, many times you were threatened that you would be fired. And the problem they had was you were doing it all for free, you know.
Well, so. I did have the board that night say to me they were going to fire me because I spoke up in that meeting with the governor.
Yeah, you're embarrassing them.
Talking about women as a women's fund.
Well, you should know better than that. So those are a couple of things. Well, it you know, I was talking with one of our interns about the problem that I perceived with the Occupy Wall Street movement of a few years ago. And it seemed like they were all over the place. I mean, they were not focused.
A lot of issues.
And they were very ineffective in my estimation. And what was interesting to me.
I think there are people who would disagree, but go ahead.
I know, and I'm getting to that because our intern was saying, look, the effectiveness of that movement wasn't in making change at that moment. The effectiveness of that movement was bringing people together who were motivated and creating relationships that will make change for decades to come. So the action itself may have looked ineffective at the moment, but now there's all sorts of communities and all sorts of groups and relationships that are going on there that are making those changes. And that's something that, you know, I was quick to dismiss until it was pointed out to me.
Well, and just to come back to that about building relationships, when I was doing that with the governor and the cabinet and a lot of other powerful people, that strategy worked because the timing was good, the strategy was right on, and I was able to get an awful lot of people to come to the table. So it was hard for them to look away. But today, that strategy would not work. What does work, though, is the building relationship part, and that is at a local level, where we build relationships first with our own activism within ourselves and embrace that and say, we got to do something. And then the other thing is to build it with people who are like-minded. Think it doesn't even have to be that like-minded. It means we have to focus on what we have in common. And then we can go from there. So those are the relationships we have to build today. Not the president, you know, of something, but the guy who lives next door, or the guy who runs the garbage truck, or the guy who, the woman who hands out the stuff at McDonald's. Where are those people in our life who have something in common with us?
Well, once you've identified the goal and you've gotten yourself motivated to do this, how do you keep yourself motivated? How do you keep yourself moving forward?
Well, I think you have to have specific steps that you say you're going to make. And I highly suggest you write them down, because sometimes it's hard to remember that you actually did anything, because it can seem so tedious and lots of pushing back. Although the more they push back, the more they tell you we're not doing that or whatever, then the more you know somewhere you're making some headway.
Well, but that can be very discouraging.
Well, but it's a fact of life. It's all a part of an equation that's about being an activist. So I think a big part of pushback is that those of us who are not in that movement, we have to be saying to you as an activist, when you're trying to do something, well done, you're making progress. I know that's what awards mean to people, is to get an award is only saying you don't stop, keep going.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot of ways we
can
do better.
I mean, we had that in your situation there in Florida, where you were feeling very discouraged, and then this national group, the Giraffe Foundation, gave you this award.
For sticking my neck out
for
battered
women. Yeah, and I remember telling you, well, guess you got to keep going, because they gave you an award. You know?
Yeah, I was ready to quit. I was feeling pretty hopeless because I was sick and I didn't know what I was doing, and I actually did win.
So let's say you do win. Then what? I mean, you got to have a strategy to actually win. A lot of these people, they make all this movement, they get their goal, and they don't know what to do with the ball once they caught it.
Well, winning has a lot of definitions. And so winning could be that it's all about people working together, and you come up with a lot of cool things, like you were talking about with the Wall Street issue group. And so what does that mean? And I think you have to define that. But where do you want to be with that? And how do you want to use it once you have it? And maybe you just give it away. I don't know. Or maybe you never win. Maybe it's the process of trying to get there and building these relationships and seeing how those people go home and do something. Again, it's all part of the strategy, and we'll talk about it at Blue Rock Station when we have the accidental activist.
Mm-hmm. So do not go calmly or quietly into that good night. Okay, well,
what's that mean?
Well, it's a famous poem about struggling against the inevitability of old age, but that's a whole different one. All right, so
thank goodness.
Well, you've been actively listening to When the Biomass Hits the Wind Turbine with Jay and Annie Warmke. We'd like to thank our Emmy-winning producer, Adam Rich. Yay, Adam. And thank you for spending just a little bit of time with us. As your grandmother probably, hopefully, actively told you, the secret to a happy and sustainable life is...
play sorta nice with others unless you want to win. Clean up your own mess. And Jay, would you please eat your vegetables at least once?
At least once a day. All right, I'll try and change.
Mother Earth will sing and her children will be healed.
You can find more information on living sustainably in our unsustainable world at BlueRockStation.com.